vamos de nuevo, Simón. Simón Bolívar, Simón. En el sur la voz amiga es la voz de José Artigas, que también tenía razón.
The closer you sit to the front, the better it'll be for the PowerPoint. So we'd like to start this part of the program. I'm a retired pastor and I'm used to people not listening to me, so that's okay, but we're going to start. We're glad to have you here and really happy for this occasion. We're not exactly on schedule, but we're moving along. I just want to say, 40 years ago, a group of people, including Henrietta Levine, Allison Clark, and Bob Malone, were really concerned about what was going on in Latin America, and especially in Chile, and they decided they would get together and try to really offer some information beyond what people were getting and offer some support, and that's the beginning of Rockless. So we're here on the 40th anniversary of this great organization. Henrietta and Allison are out of town, but we hope that sometime, maybe this summer, we can have another celebration. Also, 25 years ago, we came up with a beans and rice dinner, and it's been very successful, and as you can tell, a growing opportunity. We've added the White Dove Awards, and if you look at the honors of the International White Dove, it's really Howard Zinn and some Jennifer Harbury, some people who have really made a statement in international affairs and justice. And so we're very pleased to be a part of that process. You'll see that in April we have an immigration movie coming up, and Barb Deming's going to lead a discussion on that. We're not sure about June, but in May, but in June we're having a woman speak. He's a student at Buffalo who's just back from Honduras, and she went with Graham Russell and Rights Action Group, and she'll be sharing her experience there. Here's something you can all buy into. If one more of you gives a pledge of support for RACLA, we will receive for 2013 the highest amount we have ever received. So I'll just stand here and let you all come forward. But if you'd like to respond with one short $25 or whatever you could, we will really be over anything we've ever done in the past. And then in our economy, what's going on, that's a very exciting thing too. So remember that. Other announcements at this time, anyone wants to share? I know there were a couple people spoke to me. Anyone? Phil?
Yeah, I've been talking to some of the folks that are raging grannies and I can't think of the other group, the Band of Rebels, because one of the wonderful participants in both of those events, Sally Chamberlain, died this past week, and I went to visit her, but it was a little too late. She was not responding. But I think take a little moment to remember her as a real fighter for justice in all ways.
Could we have just a moment of silence? Are there other people who we need to remember? Jim Schmidt is another person who touched a lot of lives in social justice. So let's just have a moment of quiet. We're thankful for those who care and do so much. I think John Honick wants to make an announcement. John is kind of our representative to get rid of the School of Americas. John?
I got a flyer here for March 25th. It's the day after the anniversary of Archbishop Romero of El Salvador, his murder by SOA graduates. If you want it, I'll just put some on either side. And if you can make it, great. Don't guarantee that they're going to listen at the federal building, but we can always put our voice out there for people that don't have a voice. So thank you.
Any other announcements to be made? Yes, Vic. Vic has been in charge of our Cuba caravan with Pastors for Peace for many years. There's a change this year that he'll talk briefly about.
It's great to see so many people here. For 20 years, about half the number of years that this organization has been in existence, RACLA has participated as one of many organizations in the Pastors for Peace Friendshipment to Cuba. This year will be no exception, but the organization is going to be somewhat different. We don't know all the details yet, but there'll be a lighter footprint, less concentration on large amounts of aid and trucks and lots of fuel, and more emphasis on organization of people around helping specific projects in Cuba. The headquarters city this year, instead of being Havana, will be Santiago, where they suffered immense damage during the hurricane. About 130,000 homes were destroyed. So we will be gathering more high-value aid, like the medicines we've purchased for many years, and the aid will be carried more by individuals in backpacks and suitcases and so on. But we will be focusing on education. We'll be focusing, as we always have, on our relationship with the men and women of Cuba. The effort will be further defined as the weeks and days unfold. So if any of you have any suggestions, I'd be glad to hear them. And I'll be in further communications with the Pastors for Peace organization in New York City. The Friendship Month will be, as usual, in the beginning of July of this year, within the first couple weeks of July. Thank you.
Any other announcements? If not, I think we'll turn to our live auction. Every year we have people who generously donate things to be auctioned off, and we have our own auctioneer, Bob Good, to introduce this. And I think he has a great assistance this year.
Hi, everyone. And I want to also give thanks to Hannah for helping out with the cleanup. Many of you saw her help come around and pick up silverware and plates, so she's here. Just real briefly, as I say every year, Rockla has always been a real close to my heart over the years as well. When I first came to Rochester in whatever year it was, 74, 75, it was one of the first organizations I met, and I've felt like it's had a place there special to me for all those years, so I've always enjoyed it. Tonight we are going to actually only have a couple of items, and Hannah's going to help me with the first one. And let me pick it up first. This is and Marilyn might be able to give a little more detail, but it's a hand-painted, hand-colored print from a wood carving of a backstrap weaver from Guatemala. So the carving itself was exquisitely done and is beautiful, and now it was also on top of that hand-painted. So Hannah's going to walk around so people can get a little closer view. And I talked a little bit to Marilyn, and she thought that a minimum bid of 50 would be a good place to start. So let people see it if they wish to and get a little closer look, and we'll see if we have anyone who this, it is really one. And as many of you all know, Marilyn does exquisite work and has for many, many years with her weavings and paintings and portraits of the women of Guatemala who have made, you know, such a cultural treasure of weaving. So as Hannah's walking around showing it, I'd like to know if anybody would like to have this in their house. Yes? Okay, so we're starting off at 50. You know, my wife watches the Antique Roadshow, and after it, it's followed by this other thing, some kind of a antique hunters, and I kind of watch these auctioneers. They can like go on so fast and I can't do anything like it, but we do have 50 over here, and we have our wonderful Hannah who's walking around and getting it. Is it a little, is it heavy? It's a little heavy, doesn't it? So if anyone else has a thought on this and seeing if it can be something they would like to have as a gift or as their own home, it's a prized piece. And would love to see someone else have an interest in it, but if not, I don't. Oh, we have a 60. Okay. You want to go over and let her see it again? You can then have maybe some other folks see it. There you go. So we have 50, we have 60. So we have 60 down here in the front. Okay. We have 70. Let her see a little bit more of it there. Okay. Does anybody else want to take a little look at it? It is really beautiful. So we have a bit of 80. Okay, we have a bit of 80 up here in the middle, and it's a gorgeous piece, as you all know, and it would grace anyone's home or a place for a special gift, a wedding gift, a graduation gift coming up from college or high school. Okay. All right. Okay. We're moving on. Now there we go. We're generating some interest. Okay, we have, is that two? Is that the same bid? There were two hands that went up simultaneously. Okay, we have 100. Anybody would like to see it, we'll keep walking around with it, but if not, we can, I think they just enjoy having you come around and show it to them, Hannah. She's doing a wonderful job. So we have a bid of 100. We have 100 for Marilyn Anderson's hand-painted wood block print. It is a beautiful piece. So we have 100. Okay, we have 110. Very good, Hannah. You can go over and show this person what her 110 picture looks like. All right. Now, there we go. We've got some other folks looking at it. Jim, did that strike any more interest over there? We have 110 at the moment. And we have a lot of folks taking a look at it. All right. So we have 110. Does that look like that's what we're at? Okay. Oh, now we got some in back and forth. All right, we have 120 over here with Jim Bearden. And Hannah's getting her workout, walking around showing it to everybody. It is beautiful, isn't it? Okay, so we have 120 over here on the left. And anybody else? We'll let it go here once. Okay, going twice. We have the last bid as 120 on the with Jim Bearden. And I think it is sold. Okay. You want it? Why don't you just go give it to him? You can see where it is. It's over here, Hannah. Point out where Jim is to Hannah so they can get it there. On your left, dear. Right in there. Okay. So I just spoke to Lori Gertner today. I think I might have got his last name pronounced wrong, so I apologize. He is en route back from New York from a long trip, and he's still on the road, so unfortunately he wasn't able to be here. But I spoke to him, and as he has in other years, he is offering a airplane flight for two. Over the Finger Lakes or other places of your choice. We usually have some people here who've had it before, but I don't see Ted here tonight or I don't see Windsor here tonight. So they have each had it in the past and have just gushed about it, about how beautiful it is. It can be at least an hour, but he said in the past it's often gone well longer than that. And it's gone for an hour and a half or 2 hours or even longer. So it's a two-person, it's similar to a Cessna. So it's a two-person single-engine plane. It leaves from SOTUS, and he goes up with you and, you know, takes you all over, and I'm sure you get to see some incredible sights. And he says he feels the Finger Lakes are really some of the most beautiful places to go to, but he's open to, you know, going up towards Messina or up the river, up towards, you know, Thousand Islands and that sort of thing as well. So he has asked for a minimum bid this year. So let me just let you know what that is, and we'll see if anybody can start there. But he asked for a minimum bid of $250. It's a beautiful trip, and it's a wonderful either a gift or a surprise or, for, you know, things that two people want to do. Tom? You got that? Okay, so first of all, he's offering two of these. So if we get one now for Tom, for sure, then if there is the second one, he'll offer a second one as well. But if anybody wants to, you know, bid on the second one or just to kind of overbid with Tom, but at least we have one of these taken care of. So would anybody like a second trip? Anybody would like another trip with him offering a second trip for two people? And if not, I think we have Tom for his selection of.
I'll bet you if you offered to throw me out of the plane, you get some.
You could get some. That's right. There you go. $260. Okay. All right. We have a bid for $260. We'll tell you what. Let's just say that you're going to do for $250, and how about we say that you have one for $250, and if there's any other interest, somebody can overbid one of those two. But since he offered two and he offered for a minimum of $250, I'm saying they each get one. And then if there's anybody else who wants one, then you can we can kind of overbid and see what we got. Okay, well, I know we do want to move this along, so I feel very, very good that we've gotten both of those done, and I want to thank everybody. And in the past years, my wife and I have offered a cabin in the Finger Lakes We're not doing it this year. We have a new granddaughter coming and yada, 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 but we certainly hope to again. So perhaps that next year or the year after, we'll be able to offer that again, because it's a beautiful spot down in the Finger Lakes for a weekend, but not this time. So thank you all very, very much. And thanks, Anna.
We don't care if Bob comes back, but would you bring your granddaughters? She's a great auctioneer. Well, I'm the guy who's been elected to throw Tom out of the airplane. So Pete Seeger has a song in which I think really speaks to Tom Ward's efforts for social justice. Pete once wrote, and I changed this language, "One person's hands can't tear a prison down. Two people's hands can't tear a prison down. But if 2 and 2 and 50 make a million, we'll see that day come round. We'll see that day come round. One person's eyes can't see the future clear. One person's voice can't shout to make them hear. One person's strength can't ban the atom bomb. But if 2 and 2 and 50 make a million, we'll see that day come around. We'll see that day come around." It seems to me that Tom Ward lives out these words of the song of Pete Seeger and the way he lives, and he's especially concerned with the people who are on the outside looking in and the injustices of our world. And it doesn't really matter whether it's here in Rochester or in Latin America, he really has the ability to connect with people. And if you've been with him on any of his trips to the Latin America, you know he has this great gift. Can't speak the language very well, but he sure can identify with the people. And it's probably even more so when it comes to children. He has this great ability to be on a dirt floor with people in a village in Guatemala, or if you've ever been to the Y, we go to the Y, and the kids all there all love him in the hall of the Y. So this is the kind of person that Tom is. And along with some other people in this room, Tom has been very involved with the Guatemala Partners. It's a group centered in this church that has really had a great concern for indigenous women in Guatemala, many of whose husbands were murdered in the terrible massacres of the 80s. And these people, Tom is the chair of the group, as you see, have gone down to Rabinal, and they've also done a lot of financial support of things and enabled these women to really regain their self-esteem and have a lot of successful cooperative projects. And these certainly would not have happened if it hadn't been for the kind of impetus Tom and these other people gave to it. So that's another indication, I think, of why Tom is really deserving of this. In his spare time, he's very active in the Masons. He's a docent at the Frank Lloyd Wright House in Buffalo. Took the time off somehow. We had a tragic case here of a young man who was paralyzed in a swimming accident, and Tom was one of the people who helped build a handicapped accessible addition to his parents' house. So he's done all these things. And as members of the Y, we can tell you that that's no easy facility up there on Elm Grove, to run. And he does a marvelous job up there as the plant facilities manager. So these are all things he does. And I know that Rockla, right now, tonight, and almost every other meeting would be in terrible shape if Tom weren't around to do our audiovisual for us. We have a group of wonderful, hardworking people who are totally ignorant when it comes to technology. Beginning with myself, so Tom has bailed us out many, many times, whether it's doing stuff, helping our speakers to set up their program tonight, giving a person a ride home, washing dishes, and unbelievably, he does all these things, I think, with good humor and goodwill, and so that's a real gift to be able to do that. Sometimes after meetings of Rockla, Merrill and I go to Rawbox with Tom. And I've been on lots of work projects with Tom, too, but I won't tell any of those stories tonight. I'm afraid he'd get back to me in his things, so I'll let you go on that. But I think, really, what we do have here is a person who is really living out this one person, two people, a whole bunch of other people, like some of you in this room, who are committed to turning the world around. And we see things, not always everything we like, but this drop in a bucket can really make a difference. And so, to me, it's really a great privilege and honor to introduce a wonderful guy, a great friend, Tom Ward, as our White Devil recipient. It says the Rochester Committee on Latin America grants the 2013 Local White Dove Award to Tom Ward for his tireless work on behalf of the people of Latin America and Rockla. Tom has traveled to Nicaragua, Guatemala, and El Salvador, always identifying with the needs of the indigenous people. His commitment and enthusiasm have inspired others to become involved in Latin American justice issues.
Thank you.
You deserve it.
First of all, Bob, I thank you for those very kind words that I wrote. And I much prefer hearing them at an event like this rather than at my memorial service, where I don't have a chance at rebuttal. I'm afraid you do. Let me see. Flip it over. While we're waiting, if you can get that. While we're waiting, I want to tell you that the music that you've been hearing tonight is from a group from Chile called Inti Illimani. Inti Illimani was formed in 1967, and they were on a tour in Europe in 1973 when Pinochet took over. So at the same time that RACLA was formed, this group was on a tour. Because they supported Allende, by the time they got back, Pinochet wouldn't let them come back into the country, so they just threw a concert on the tarmac there at the airport. They had to go back to Italy, and 15 years that was that tour, so that was the longest tour in record. But they have come back, and they do continually perform. They're a great group. So I want to say welcome and thank you all very much for this wonderful award. And when I tell my friends that I'm the winner of the White Dove Award, they look at me puzzled and they say, are you sure they don't mean the Rampaging Bull Award? And then I came here tonight, and I don't know how many of you saw this, but I got presented with another award from my good friend Ernie Matlin. It says the Dove Award. Tom Ward is God's gift to the Latin American solidarity movement. He has improved the life of every woman, man, and child who lives south of the Rio Grande River. He is worshipped as a god, if I can only get my wife to do that, in many remote Latin American communities. And dictators in Latin America tremble with fear and trepidation when they hear the words, Tom Ward is coming. Thanks, Ernie. And it's nice to see so many of my friends out there, but I have a confession to make. However, I spread the rumor around that I won this prestigious award. They're all here because they heard there was a cash prize attached to it, and they thought I was going to have enough money to pay them back. Sorry, fooled you. But let's go back to Nicaragua, 1994. We had broken camp, and we were about to leave the tiny little mountain village of Los Rastrojos. As we gathered to say goodbye to the people that we had come to love and work beside for the last 10 days, while we were there helping to build a school, suddenly appeared a double rainbow. And it seemed to affirm our visit there and made a spectacular send-off for us. And my life had been changed forever. Now, 8 years later, when I was making plans to go to Guatemala with Gates Presbyterian Group for the first time, I wanted to go on down to Nicaragua and visit Los Rastrojos, and I was trying to set up a place to stay while I was there, an interpreter or somebody could, you know, help me with the languages Bob alluded to. I'm not very good at it. And everything that I tried to set up was falling through. But I got to the point, I was in my office, and I knew that I either had to make a decision that day whether I was going to go or I was going to book the return flight with my friends from Gates. Not having anybody set up yet, I decided, darn it, I was going to go. Throw myself into a foreign country, not be able to speak the language, no idea where I was going to stay, no idea what I was going to eat, no idea how I was going to get around. But hey, what the heck, it's an adventure. So I booked it. And less than 2 hours later, I looked out the window of my office and there was a double rainbow. I'm not kidding. And then the next morning, word came that Jim and Bonnie Gordon and Messiah were going to host me and take me back to the village. They work with Bridges to Community, another group that I work with. So when I first tell people about the things I do and the places that I go, they always ask me the famous question, Really? Why? And that's a tough thing to answer. Many of us don't know why we choose to do what we do. But I think my first inclination of the awakening to the plight of the Latin American people was when I heard the Rockland members, the late John and Marilyn Mould, talk about the sanctuary movement. And then the sanctuary movement was to help refugees from El Salvador come to this country, have the safety of the church, speak out to the American public about what was really going on down there, which most of us didn't know. And that really piqued my interest. And then as I went along, I learned about the School of the Americas, which is more notoriously called throughout Latin America as the School of the Assassins. Then there was a Contra War in Nicaragua, the murder of Benjamin Lindner, the atrocities in El Salvador that were unimaginable, the assassination of the beloved Archbishop Oscar Romero, which you heard about earlier from John Hanick, the murder of four U.S. missionary women, the brutal, cold-blooded murder of six Jesuit priests, their housekeeper, and her 15-year-old daughter at the University of Central America, how in small villages, bodies were left in the street and heads were put on fence posts. And then there was the Guatemala Civil War. I don't know how that term ever came to be. There's no war that's civil. But it was really plain genocide against the Mayan people. And the killers still go largely unpunished by being granted immunity. And the list goes on and on and on. And behind it all was lurking Uncle Sam. So how can you not get outraged when you hear of such things and not try to change it? This kind of news and attempting to prevent more of the same, it can tire you out, it can wear you out, and it can burn you out in short order. So to keep going, I draw my inspiration from many good people that I've met along the way on this incredible journey that I have been on for work that cannot be done alone. The English poet John Donne recognized this several years ago when he said that no man is an island and tire of itself. He goes on to say, each man's death diminishes me, for I am involved in mankind. Therefore, send not to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. I am inspired by people like the 86-year-old nun, the 9-year-old girl, the retired school teacher, our friend John Hanick, who is a father of three and a husband and worked at Lifetime Assistance. And I watched them cross the line at Fort Benning, Georgia, onto the military base, risking arrest, and arrested they were. And all of them, except the 9-year-old girl, went to federal penitentiaries. So the peacemakers go to jail. The killers roam loose. Does anyone else see anything wrong with this picture? The White Dove Award that I am receiving really belongs to all of those people, but especially here at Gates Presbyterian, to the members of the Guatemala Partners Group. I share this award with them. They're a small but tireless group, dedicated people, and have really been making a big difference in one small community that is over 3,145.8 miles away, according to Google. I'd like to ask all the members that are here tonight of the Guatemala Partners Group, and especially Cheryl Taylor, who led this group for the first 9 years or so of its existence. Would everybody from the Guatemala Partners Group and past members like Mike and Haley, now that you live 3,148 miles away in Canisius, you're still a part of our group. So would you all stand and be recognized, please? And I also want to give a shout out to Margie McKnight, who is a real hard worker in this group, but she couldn't be here because she had some health concerns tonight and she's home recuperating. It's also a great honor to have my family here tonight. That's my granddaughter Elena and my daughter Trina, who's a Presbyterian minister and has a sense of social justice and concern for the poor and oppressed as well. My beautiful mother over here, who somehow installed a sense of moral correctness in an otherwise twisted mind, Pat Tripoli. My wonderful sister sitting next to her in the blue over here, who is also a radical in her own right, past president of NOW and member of Planned Parenthood, Marcia Pioni. And most of all, however, I have one person, very special person here, who has given me a lot of space to be who I want to be, to do what I've got to do, and has put up with me for 40 years this July. She's the one that deserves the award, my red-haired Scottish beauty, Irene. Contrary to public opinion, I'm not the easiest guy to live with, although I thought I was, but... But this award also goes to the Mayan widows. Oh, hasn't this been running? Oh, man. Well, anyway. No, that's all right. No, go ahead. I don't know how that... Well, that's all right. Just if we can find some pictures of the Mayans. The Mayan widows who have been working with the last 13 years in Panacal, Guatemala. The cattle and pig project have been successful there, and largely due to their own initiatives, which is the way it should be. They've learned how to work together, and they've learned how to trust each other, which at first when we went there, we didn't realize they were from five different communities. And because of the violence that had been there, they didn't trust anybody. It was very difficult to trust anyone. And so they've figured that out, and now they're working together. And having addressed the initial need for some subsistence for their families, we are now awarding scholarships and getting involved in microlending for a more long-term solution to the problem. And while they'll probably never be in Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, they are the most beautiful people in the world. When you look into their eyes and you look at their faces, you can see the pain and the sorrow that they carry and the loads that they've had to bear. You can see the hardness of their lives, the daily struggle to just survive. But you can also see their love for others and for their family, their determination and their tenacity. Outwardly, they appear to be a simple people. But when you look inside their faces, you find that they are as complex as the beautiful tapestries that they weave. Elie Wiesel once said, "There may be times when we are powerless to prevent injustice, but there must never be a time when we do not protest." Thank you once again.
I told you he had a good sense of humor, and you can see why he's a great White Dove Award. And now Marilyn Anderson, another one of our wonderful activists, is going to introduce our International White Dove Award honorees.
Can I ask where the award is?
I took them all.
Okay. All right, thank you. When we decided to give the award to Orrin Langell and Ann Peterman of the Global Justice Ecology Project, I said, I want to introduce them. And so here I am, and the rest of the committee let me do this, so I'm going to read what I wrote. And it's hard to tell you how pleased I am that RACLA is giving the White Dove Award to the Global Justice Ecology Project, to Executive Director Ann Peterman and Board Chair Orrin Langell. Most of us know how intertwined ecology is with human rights and peace and justice issues. GJEP does a great service to the environmental and Latin American solidarity community in the U.S. and Canada by putting those issues out in front. And they're right their home base is right over in Buffalo, too. And through the talented work of Oren, they give us a brilliant example of how photography and video can not only document injustice, but can inspire struggle and resistance. Among the many examples of his work on a GLEP website, you will see Oren's photos, a photo essay about the threat of displacement among the Tzeltal Maya people of Chiapas, Mexico. The work on that work on their website, in fact, drew me to first support them. I need to tell you that I first lived in a Tzeltal village in 1959-60, and these photos had great resonance for me. It was my very first experience in Mexico or in Guatemala. The range of their efforts, the efforts of both Anne and Oren, in the 10 years they have been in existence, and before that too, will impress you, and they will be telling you about it tonight and showing it to you. Anne Peterman's areas of expertise as it is its executive director include her work with the indigenous groups to help protect their rights, and a very big effort, the Stop the GE Trees campaign, genetically engineered trees. Oren has been what we often call a concerned photographer since the 70s. Several of our Rockcliffe Steering Committee members remember meeting him first in Nicaragua and in Chiapas more than 20 years ago. Rockcliffe believes that it's important to recognize the sum of Anne and Oren's work, and in a special way to recognize Oren's photography as art in the service of peace and justice. Here in Rochester, and we all need to keep remembering this, because of our history, the particular role photography plays has special meaning. And so this evening, I'm really pleased to be able to present our White Dove Award to both Anne and Oren. Now, I'm going to read the words. The Rochester Committee on Latin America presents the 2013 International White Dove Award to the Global Justice Ecology Project, inspired and sustained by Oren Langell and Ann Peterman. Their dedicated efforts to protect indigenous peoples' rights and native forests and to promote social, environmental, and ecological justice in Latin America and beyond are enhanced by their use of concerned photography. So, Friday, March 1st, 2013, 25th Annual Rice and Beans Dinner, Gates Presbyterian Church, Rochester, New York.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So, Oren will be showing a wonderful slideshow. I've seen a bit of it, but anyway, we're looking forward to that. And again, I'm just so pleased. It's the first time we've given our White Dove Award to a photographer, and I think it's about time.
Did you want to say something?
Before Oren starts his slideshow, I'm just going to mention that I'm going to pass around Global Justice Ecology Project sign-up sheets. If you'd like to stay in touch with us, please sign these up. I'm a consummate name collector, and so I'd like to collect your name. I'll be sending around two of them, and then I'll try to collect them at the end. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Marilyn, for the kind words. My name is Orrin Langell. I'm the board chair, co-founder of Global Justice Ecology Project. And on behalf of the board, behalf of the staff, and I think Ann's going to name more people, we really want to thank RACLA for honoring us and the Global Justice Ecology Project. It's a very big thing to us on the 25th anniversary of the Rice and Bean Center and the 40th anniversary of the founding of RACLA. I'm going to show some slides about some of the work that Ann and I have done probably within the last 20 years. We've only had Global Justice Ecology for the last decade. This is our 10th anniversary. But some of the work that we've done before is just as much Global Justice Ecology Project as not, because it's the work that has led us into Global Justice Ecology Project and through the work that we do. It sometimes is very hard work, as I'm sure you all know, that it's very can really drain you out. But one thing that's really good is we've had the opportunity to meet some of the most wonderful people in the world by traveling, by seeing people, and by supporting struggles in solidarity with people in Latin America. We work with indigenous peoples all over the world. I have a very special thing in my heart for Chiapas, Mexico, and the struggle of the Zapatistas, who I believe have shown that there is another way, there is another world that is possible, and they've been living it through tremendous difficulty. The first photo that I have up here is dedicated actually to RACLA on its 40th anniversary, because this photograph was taken in Chile, and this is an indigenous Mapuche man walking across a newly planted eucalyptus plantation, getting rid of the seedlings that were planted there. One of the reasons that he was doing that and why that was so important is because when Pinochet took power, he gave so much land and territory, took it away from the people, and gave it to timber companies. And timber companies have displaced people with eucalyptus plantations. And so a lot of the communities that this gentleman is from are actually having tremendously horrendous effects because of these plantations, the chemicals used on them, et cetera. And so just people, just to let you know, some of those laws from 40 years ago are being used against the Mapuche today, but their struggle carries on. So, Ann. This is in Brazil. Those are eucalyptus. That's a eucalyptus plantation. And what you see there is a little dwelling that people in the community built. They actually cut down a lot of the trees, and they reclaimed the land there. This is an indigenous community, and they were reclaiming the land because it was rightfully theirs. And that's some of the spirit, I think, that really inspires me from working in Latin America, is people actually take direct action and get things done and do it. I better go quickly, but this is also in Brazil, and it says plantations of eucalyptus are not forests, and this is a rural landless workers movement camp, and a few weeks before we got there, they cut down a timber plantation and put they squatted the land there, and they named it after a slain indigenous leader, and we were really proud to be able to visit the camp and see the people. In the same vein, this is in Paraguay. This is an Ayurio person. I had the opportunity to be one of the first white people to be invited as a photographer to photograph this community. It's the first community of captured Ayurio that right now there's a whole lot of Ayurio that are not captured and are still in their home territory doing what they want to do and living off the land, which is their home. And things are really in very much flux right now because of the situation last year when there was a right-wing coup against the democratically elected government there. And just a little here. Now I'll go into some history. This happened back in 1993. These are some college students that were blockading the United States-Canadian border. That's a border guard on that side right there. And they were doing that because of NAFTA and the North American Free Trade Agreement. They weren't trying to stop people from crossing, but they were trying to show to stop the border from the commercial traffic that was going to be crossing and going, you know, all the way down through, you know, United States and Mexico. So some of us had a New Year's Eve party, actually, in 1993 and became in the morning of 1994. A lot of us were very depressed because we did work hard to try to stop NAFTA. And we woke up in the morning, and one of the things came out over the news that a band of indigenous people called the Zapatistas did a rebellion and started taking over towns, villages, setting prisoners free, and took over the provincial capital, or not the provincial, but the traditional capital, San Cristóbal de las Casas. I was there in 1996 in La Realidad, which is the rebel base. This is Comandante Tajo. And all throughout the area, there was such a feeling of, if the Zapatistas can do it, that, you know, we all can. And I was just so impressed with the struggle there. This is also in La Realidad. Zapatistas hanging around each other, Comandante. And if you notice up in the right-hand corner, you'll see a nose. I have no idea why that's there. This is in San Cristobal, just kind of throwing something in, that this was a woman that was really protesting against the upcoming war in Iraq and was protesting and hoping for peace. After my first trip down to Chiapas, we were invited to go down to Nicaragua. We were asked to go down to Nicaragua and go to the Bolsavas rainforest. And we were asked actually by Brian Wilson, I'm sure that's a name that's fairly familiar, who was a person that tried to stop a munitions train. So we had a group of people. We went down. We were with a lot of indigenous people. We saw what was being done in this one area. We did a lot of commotion. We did protests at the United States, the Nicaraguan embassy in the United States, got photos in Barracata, and anyway saved like about 150,000 acres, is that right, of indigenous territory and stopped the destruction of that forest. And also going down in subsequent years, many different trips, we were with in different communities. This was in Rosita, the mining triangle, and this was a person that was a community meeting to talk about what the logging corporations were doing and the illegal loggers. This was in the middle of the Bolsavas, not the middle, but it was pretty far deep into the Bolsavas, and another community meeting. And I had the fortune of being in a ponga, which is a dugout canoe, with some indigenous people, and we were going the other way, and I took the shot. And just to throw in that here's Greenstone Mining Company in the mining triangle, and a lot of really bad things have been going on. I'm not sure what's happening now. I haven't been down in a few years, but prior in the late 90s, early 2000s, things were pretty bad in that area. I was involved in the first environmental justice delegation after Hurricane Mitch. This was the Las Casitas volcano broke, and all the water and mud and everything swept down through Postlatega, through the village where all kind of people were living. Actually, I'm standing on a mass grave right now, taking a photograph of an upside down tree. That tremendously, I think, has always haunted me, that I stood on a mass grave. But we were invited by the mayor of Postlatega. A long story about that, but it was about logging and all kind of crap pulled by elements. Excuse my language. This is Joanna Medine and her son. She carried her son 2.5 kilometers when the mudslide occurred, and they survived. A lot of people, you know, there were thousands that didn't. There were people that, you know, got stuck in the mud. They had legs amputated. And this is some peanut, these are children in a peanut field that their parents had to go away and leave them so they could try to make some money to send back so the children can eat. And these children were actually walking around trying to, you know, getting peanuts off the ground where there once was a peanut growing area. It was now all covered with this mud. And some of you see, I've seen this photograph, and it's not that I'm trying to be an outlaw or anything like that. It's just all the mud and the dust and everything. In Posilitega, I had to cover my face and tried to cover my cameras. A guy by the name of Cliff McCarthy took that photo, and that's why you see me with this bandana. We do a lot of work against the World Bank because the World Bank has definitely been involved and made life miserable for millions of people in South America, Central America, Mexico, all around the world. This is actually a protest at the United Nations Climate Convention in Bali, Indonesia. This is was called A16 2000 in Washington, D.C., right after, I guess not too many months after the Battle of Seattle. And this was the next major protest against globalization in this country. This was taken in Cancun, Mexico, actually, against the WTO, right really close where that photograph was taken. A gentleman was on the fence from South Korea, committed suicide because of the farmers that were getting all the bad treatment in not only just South Korea, but all throughout the world because of the WTO. And people tore down the fence. People cut the fence with bolt cutters. And it was an ongoing battle with the police. I'm going to get into the FTAA, Free Trade Area of the Americas. This is a banner that we hung in 99. It was right before the Battle of Seattle. And Anne actually is the person on the right with her fist up in the air. And we actually did, this was actually the first protest against the FTAA. And people were putting their energy into the WTO in Seattle, and we decided we would fire a shot over the bow of capitalism by dropping this banner because all the trade ministers from the United States down to the tip of Chile and Argentina were there. This was sort of fast forward through a lot of things. This was Miami in 2003. At another Free Trade Area of the Americas protest, and it was sort of the death knell of the Free Trade Area of the Americas. After that, Zelik and other people started signing bilaterals, but a lot of people came out, and again, this was sort of the end. It was very, very intense protest, and a lot of people were shot with rubber bullets and tear gas. Union people were hurt. This photograph was taken in Chiapas, Mexico, in Nuevo San Gregorio. We got word that we were asked to go down with Global Exchange. I was told to get a bunch of journalists together and go down to this village because Conservation International, which is this fraudulent environmental organization, and the Mexican military were going to forcibly relocate people from this village because they wanted the land for, we thought it had to do with Plan Pueblo Panama. Wasn't really sure, but because of our presence, all villagers from, I think, 8 different communities were not relocated. They refused to go. This is some children that made a sign about the situation. And there were some people that were that did relocate. They did so without saying no, and they were relocated into some really squalid conditions. And this is a woman that was very sick that was in it. Relocated. This is another situation that happened not too long ago, I guess in 2011. This is a man and his child, and his child was having convulsions. This is in a town in Amador Hernandez. We had to go like 15 kilometers by horseback into the jungle after spending like a day in trucks and stuff to get to that point. And I think Marilyn touched on that a little bit, but this is it was a very important thing that happened, I think, really showed the power of photojournalism. We were told that there were 4 days left before the Mexican military were going to come in. We went in, myself as a photographer, we had 2 Spanish videographers and a writer, and we pledged that we would stay throughout the whole thing. And if the Mexican military came in, it looked like there was going to be a battle, and we said, well, we will stay. and the Mexican military never came in. We made a tremendous stink about this all over the world. And this is a family of elders, or this is an elder man and woman from Amador Hernandez. They weren't going to go. But to this day, the village of Amador Hernandez is standing, and not only is it standing, it organized and started organizing more and more in their community about what was going to happen with these forced relocations. Here's some medicinal women that are healers. Amador Hernandez was cut off from any medical supplies by the Mexican military for a year. I think they only dropped in condoms or something. And one of the reasons that they wanted people out, or they wanted to get people off the land, a lot of the land right now in many places, they're trying to get Mexican campesinos and indigenous people to quit growing maize and grow African palm plants. And it's African palm oil used for biodiesel and for biofuels, which is one of the false solutions that is being talked about now for climate change. The new way of relocation where they were sending people is to houses like this right now. This is in Santiago El Pinar. And we talked to the guy that was like the governor's representative there, and we're talking to him the day before the governor came in, and he asked this gentleman, how are people liking this? And he said, well, I don't know. He said, the other day my children were playing and they fell through the floor. This is the people that were moved into this camp basically were told this was a greenhouse that was growing seeds and food, that would be growing food for the people there, and they didn't know if that was true or not. So Jeff and I, the writer and I, looked at each other and said, okay, well, if nobody knows, let's go in. And there was a big padlock, and yes, we broke it. We broke the law. Sometimes you have to be an outlaw. So they're growing roses. They were totally lying to the people. Here is a United Nations meeting where this indigenous man from the Americas that was watching basically a group of white people decide fate of many different people in around the world, indigenous peoples. This was at the Convention of Biological Diversity in Bonn, Germany. I'll do a little bit more UN stuff. This is the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change in Bali. And indigenous people are really being messed around with. They always are messed around with. They never get a chance to get their word out in these meetings, nor do social movements, nor do basically corporate control has taken over all kind of the meetings, UN meetings when it comes to climate or biodiversity or indigenous people's rights or forests. This was taken in Copenhagen. This is one of our board members. He's a Cree from Manitoba. His name is Clayton Thomas Mueller. We had a walkout of the meeting in Copenhagen, the UN climate meeting, and he led the walkout, and it was to meet up with a people's assembly that was coming to meet the march out. And it never happened. This march was stopped, and the police were using clubs. And the other march, though, that was cut it down, really were attacked with violence. People got terrorism charges against them just for trying to have a say of what's going on in the world, that there are solutions to climate change, but nobody's listening to them because the corporations are really controlling everything. I threw this photograph in here. This was in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. This guy got up, where there was a guy I'm sure that you all know, have heard of, John Negroponte. He spoke not a few years ago in St. Johnsbury, and this gentleman, as soon as Negroponte started speaking, Michael got up and started yelling and screaming at him about all the deaths and all the death squads and what's happened all throughout Central America and what he's been responsible for. Well, they got Michael and they got him out, and Negroponte said, okay, well, now it's my turn. And as soon as he said that, another person got up and said, no, it's not your turn, and started repeating the same kind of a line about what was going on. And sometimes with all this bad stuff going on, you have to have a sense of humor. This is another group of rich people meeting, the G8, group of eight of the eight richest countries in the world. And this was in Rostock, Germany. And we call this a riot clown. And it's funny, we need humor, because everything so, in some ways, looks so bad that if we don't laugh, if we can't laugh, then maybe we shouldn't, we don't want your revolution. Maybe that's like I'm a Goldman, you can't dance. But And this is at Miami when the FTAA, these are police getting ready to fire. Some actually have fired on protesters with rubber bullets. And this is a future, I think, that's coming our way as we see more resources are depleted, more it's going to really get to a very strange point in history where we're going to have less and less freedoms. We're already being taken away from us. They're being taken away all over the world from people, and most people are just sitting there kind of watching this happen, and it's very, very sad. But things that give me hope, a boy in Nicaragua showing the resiliency of what people are and what they can do, and this is at a time when that photo was taken. It's after the war, of course the war of globalization always continues, and the war against the land and war against the people. But that's the resiliency of people, and that gives me hope, and I hope it does for you too. And I'd like to introduce Ann Peterman, executive director, who can probably explain things better than me. But I really want to thank you all for coming, and I really thank Rockla for everything that you do. And I've known about you for a really long time and have worked with people in the past in different situations around Plan Pueblo Panama and the free trade area of Americas. Thank you.
Thanks, Orin, and I'll try to leave this photo up because it's such a beautiful photo. And I also want to thank everyone at Rockla for this award. It's been 20 years since Orin and I opened our first office to start working on these issues, and it's been 10 years since we founded Global Justice Ecology Project, and it's been a real process to get where we are. And, you know, I want to thank a lot of people for what we've been able to accomplish, but there's too many to actually name, but particularly our donors and our volunteers, our interns, our staff members, our wonderful board members, and all of the people who've made this work possible. Orin has provided a sense of our history, the issues that we've worked on over the years in solidarity with the people of Latin America, and the issues of injustice that span the world. And that's one of the things that we've always tried to look at is, what are the interconnecting issues? How do they interconnect, and what are the real root causes of these issues? We're not interested in putting Band-Aids on problems. We're interested in finding what the real solutions are by digging deeply and addressing the problems at their roots. One of the philosophies that guides our activism is that we want to win. When we take on an issue, we do it because we want to win. We don't want to, you know, take an artificial victory or some symbolic victory. We actually want to win it. And that's one of the things that's guided us through all these years. Today we're moving into sort of a new dimension of this work. With the climate crisis becoming so prominent in the world and all of the other associated environmental crises that we hear about frequently, the water crisis, the food crisis, desertification, the extinction crisis, the global elite are now moving in the direction of trying to green their image. As we see on television all the time, you know, corporations are trying to green themselves, you know, BP, oh, they've done such good things for the Gulf region and so on. And they call this the green economy. So if you hear the words green economy, understand that it's really the same thing that Orin's been talking about, NAFTA, the Free Trade Area of the Americas, the WTO. It's the same thing, but in a bright green, shiny wrapper. We call it the greed economy, the same old greed economy. The so-called green economy is designed specifically to develop and promote false solutions to these myriad crises we're facing. And these false solutions come with innocuous-sounding names. They talk about avoided deforestation. That sounds nice, avoided deforestation. Actually, what it means is replacing natural forests with industrial timber plantations. They don't mention that. They talk about sustainable energy for all. That's a UN initiative. It's called the Sustainable Energy for All Initiative. It sounds great. It includes fracked natural gas. It includes offshore drilling. It includes large-scale industrial bioenergy and all kinds of things that are extremely destructive, but it sounds nice. These other things, these other greenwashed concepts that they're trying to push. And there's a huge momentum of people around the world that are standing up and opposing these false solutions. And that's a really inspirational thing to be involved with all of these wonderful people. And this green economy, it's fundamentally about ensuring that the United States and other industrialized countries maintain global dominance and continue to use the countries of the Global South as resource colonies. And as I mentioned, it's being pushed under a green umbrella so that we can, it's trying to con the American people into believing that we can maintain this grossly unsustainable way of life without any ecological or social consequences. And I think all of us in this room, we're here because we understand that that is very much not the case, and that those consequences can really be quite significant. So a lot of the work that we do is focused on false solutions in terms of renewable energy, so-called renewable energy, and biofuels, for example, industrial-scale biofuels. Probably you've heard about the competition with food, like corn, for example. Corn going into biofuels is taking away corn from people's mouths. It's driving food crisis. It's driving up the price of food. It's driving malnutrition. There's the also other environmental associations with biofuels. For example, this is something not a lot of people have heard about, the leveling and burning of primeval peat forests in Indonesia to clear land for palm oil plantations, not only driving very unique species like the orangutan into extinction, but also making that country the third largest emitter of carbon on the planet, all in the name of renewable energy and tackling climate change, ironically. The biggest limiting factor of making fuels from plants, which is what this is all about, trying to replace fossil fuels with plant material, is land, of course. We're trying to grow enough plant material to replace fossil fuels, manufacture these things into liquid fuels, into biomass, and into other fuels. And this is driving massive land grabs all around the world. This is something we've been working on a lot lately. In Latin America in particular, we hear about these land grabs happening, these conflicts with campesinos, with indigenous peoples throughout the Americas. The Aguan Valley in Honduras has been a real hot bed of conflict around biofuels, again for oil palm. People are being displaced and outright massacred for the expansion of oil palm plantations, Jatropha, GMO soy, and expanding timber plantations. And put simply, there's just not enough land on the planet for all of these competing interests. There's not enough land to replace the amount of petroleum that we currently use with plant material. A scientist friend of ours did an analysis, and she found out that in order to replace the amount of fossil fuel that we're currently using, you would need 6 planets worth of land to grow enough plant material. That's not going to happen. But these are not restricted to the Global South, and that's one of the things that Global Justice Ecology Project does, that our board insists upon, is that we not just work internationally, but that we work nationally and even locally. And one of the major issues that we're working on domestically in the United States is industrial timber plantations and their impacts on communities, their impacts on forests, their impacts on wildlife. And the southern U.S., the southeastern U.S. has been a real flaring point for industrial timber plantations. For a long time, the forests there have been leveled to make room for industrial timber plantations. And now that what they're doing is starting the process of trying to get approval for genetically engineered tree plantations. Marilyn touched on that. And this has been expansion of the genetically engineered food problem. I'm sure many people in this room are familiar with the problems with genetically engineered foods, GMO foods. But they're not happy with just limiting it to foods. You know, they're genetically engineering mosquitoes to deal with dengue fever, which is horrifically scary to me. But they're also genetically engineering trees to do things that trees should not do. They're genetically engineering trees to be able to kill insects. You can imagine if that gets out into a forest. You have a forest now that kills insects, insects being a key part of the food chain, the web of life. They want to be able to make trees that grow faster, that tolerate toxic herbicides, that withstand stresses like cold and drought and disease, all of which, as you can imagine, trees, they live for centuries. They pollinate, they send their pollen and seeds for hundreds of miles. This is a tremendously horrific scenario if they actually get these things approved. They don't have approval yet, and that's one of the things, that's one of the issues the campaigns we're going to win, is we're going to stop them from pushing these genetically engineered trees. And we hope that you all will help us do that. We have a petition on our website I'll send around to anybody who signed up on the sheet so you can sign it. But while we're focused on stopping genetically engineered trees for biofuels and for biomass, we're linking this effort with the work being done around the world to stop what's known as extreme energy, from large-scale hydroelectric dams that flood thousands of acres and displace entire communities, to the tar sands in Alberta that will level forests the size of Florida, to fracked natural gas that poisons water supplies, and even industrial wind farms that are being opposed by indigenous communities in Oaxaca. These so-called renewables are not being developed to replace fossil fuels. Studies have shown they're not replacing fossil fuels. They're adding to the total fuel supply, to the total energy supply. And the reason that this is happening is to enable business as usual for as long as possible beyond all natural limits. This is our challenge. How do we transform our society to ensure that justice and natural harmony prevail? How do we make sure that we have a life on Earth that's worth living, not just for our generation, but for future generations, for our children, for our grandchildren? This is the challenge that Global Justice Ecology Project is tackling head on, and to which we are deeply committed, and we hope that you all will join us in this struggle for true change. Thank you very much.
We do thank you for coming. I think we do have the silent auction results before. Is that Grenya? Who's doing that? Gail? Well, we have you here. Guatemala Partners has a program. Do you still have that, Cheryl, where you sell flowers? So you can see Cheryl Taylor, Tom Ward, if you want to help with that project. If you want to walk by the dining room, I think there might be some chairs you could help take down. We'd appreciate that in tables. Is that right, Tom? No, you're not. Tom is functioning too much. But we do thank you for coming. And maybe while we're waiting, we have the steering committee stand up and give them a round of applause. They work hard. Arnie and Grania. Steering committee meets the first Wednesday of every month at 5 o'clock. We never turn anybody away, so you'd be welcome to attend. And I don't know what's happened to the silent auction, but are there any things we need to say before we leave? Yes, Jim. Can't hear that. We're on Facebook now, right? Gail? You do it.
All right. This is really exciting because there were many bids on almost everything. Is the basket made with pine needles? Is to Scobie Beer. Is he here? The portfolio covered with beautiful Mayan backstrap woven pattern textile is Grania. Is Grania here? Small ceramic vase with etched fish decoration. And this is C&J Moss Grabber. And are they here? Framed close-up photo of the bark of a tree, and that's Melissa. Is Melissa here? Melissa, well, she will be here, so Tom will give this to her. And Sandy Kane felt sorry for me, so she is the high bidder on 27 or 9 or 30 books. Sandy. And there's the mosaic frame. Is Fran Paro? Is that right? Oh, good. Sandy, you have to get this one. I'll save it for you. This is different. The wonderful duffel bag is Cam Mossgrabber, too. So here's... This is the duffel bag for Cam Mossgrabber. And the table runner is Philip. Philip Ferrara, is that right? Good, good. They're paying you. And the matted photo of a woman with a baby. And that's Mary Lupien. Is Mary here? Does somebody know her and can give this to her? And Gary McLennan is the rollerblades. Is Gary here? Oh, Gary, who can give this to him? And the note cards made by Marilyn Anderson is Cheryl Fennell. Is she here, Cheryl and Bob? And that's it. Thank you very much.
Do you have a card? Okay, can you email me though when it's on? Oh, that'd be great.
Thank you. funny. It drove me crazy.
Yeah, right.
please do. Thank you. Oh, of course.
Jim, could you do me a favor? Could you ask your mom to sign this check? Thank you, sir. Do either of you? Yeah, she can sign. I thought about that actually, but since she's still here. Bring it back. Calendar 135, but we just got to get it signed. Okay. Now wait. So far, 165. What are we talking about? 175. And 40 is 250. Thank you. here.